is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in, everybody. Weekend edition of the Lombardi Line underway from downtown Las Vegas, our Circa Sportsbook studios. I'm Ben Wilson, in for Femi. Femi in Oxnard, California right now. Mike Paul,
Femi finds something to do every Saturday. Two more weeks you're here again, I think, for Femi, as Stephanie schedules out the rest of the year.
Yes.
It's amazing, this guy.
Femi, noted Cowboy supporter. It's a rough time right now for the Cowboy fans. He's got to check out Jerry in person, apparently. And accost him for the lack of deals that are being done so far. There was the quote yesterday as we start the show from Cowboy Camp, Dak Prescott saying, "The money is out there." Yes, Dak, the money does exist. It's just a matter of when it will come and how it will be allocated. Is CeeDee Lamb still not at the training camp? Micah Parsons dealing with bangs and bruises and nicks on so far through camp. And Dak Prescott yet to get his contract as well.
He won't. He's not getting anything. He controls it. I mean, it's all in his court. I would be shocked if there's a deal done unless they're going to pay him $300.
We did a no deal, or I should say a no way or no doubt. Should be deal or no deal with Michael.
That's a classic Lombardi segment.
That is a classic Lombardi segment. And the question posed to Michael a couple days ago was no way or no doubt two of the three, the trio we just mentioned to Cowboys, will sign before the start of the regular season. And he's like, there's no way. It's not happening. Probably one, but certainly not two. Is that a sentiment you share?
I agree 100%.
Hard to see with the way things have played out so far in Cowboy camp, how that will all play out. Other news of the day on the NFL before we dive into some Olympic breakdown. There's a lot of great Olympic stuff going on as we speak, as well as Major League Baseball. Big story in the world of MLB last night. Interesting story.
I thought, too, the first 5-under in Pittsburgh. I thought that was the headline you were leading
with. Yeah, that was the headline I was hoping to lead with. But alas, didn't quite get there. Same for the Dodger bullpen last night. But at least on the NFL front, that the Vikings are – that Justin Jefferson openly admits he's like, I'm worried about my – hamstring being re-injured, which you're talking about one of the premier players in the league. It's a guy who you figure will have to have a massive role this year with projected subpar quarterback play, whether it's Sam Darnold or J.J. McCarthy in Minnesota. And the Vikings, they've been holding out Jefferson here and there in practice. And is it just a classic camp story, Mike, or is it a sort of a frightening sign, at least, when a guy's openly saying, yeah, I'm worried about this hamstring, that we've seen those soft tissue injuries tend to pop up and be repeated for top wideouts, especially.
I think if you'd asked Mike Pritchard, he would say this, that it's just something they don't talk about openly, but guys, of course, are concerned about, especially receivers, their legs and injuries to their legs, and you're trying to play through all that, but, you know, obviously your career hangs in the balance on any one play. I don't think it's a big deal.
The big worry, you would say, for Jefferson, it's not that. It's that he turns into Larry Fitzgerald a la the John Skelton years. I mean, that's really the concern, right? You're just this generational talent. You just cannot get the football because of bad quarterback play. I don't think Darnold will be that bad.
Is Darnold that bad?
No. But that's what some people would lead you to believe. I mean, the Vikings are getting no respect whatsoever. Like, they're by far the fourth favorite in the NFC North, and I don't really understand that.
Yeah, they're a well-coached team on that, to the counter-argument on that. But they are getting overshadowed with all the Bears love, and the division is, I think it's a pretty well established fact that two of the three best teams in the NFC reside in the NFC North. So, I understand some of that bias, but there's a lot of, if Darnold shows any signs of what he did in San Francisco in that short window with that kind of offensive talent and that coaching and that head coach, they're going to be all right.
What does Darnold need more than anything to have success? It's a good offensive line to keep him upright. You prevent the seeing of the ghosts, which has plagued Mr. Darnold in the past. Vikings have a solid O-line. It's a top 10 unit. One of the highest paid left tackles in the league, and Christian Darrisaw saying it right now. Vikings, a team that will be a little undervalued heading into the start of 2024. As far as other news and notes around the sports world, Mike, we start with Blake Snell, because that was something special last night. I didn't bet him, and of course he goes out.
We had a strange scheduling day yesterday here at Circa in that we had meetings at noon, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Really?
Now, some of them were 15-minute meetings, so I was kind of back and forth here. I texted Derek. I said, Snell's got a no-no through 4. I would never usually text that early, but they weren't even making solid contact on him last night. Now, This being said about him throwing the no-hitter, do you know he'd never pitched in a ninth inning before last night? He had never pitched in the ninth inning of a game before last night. So I was going to kind of bust Mitch's balls a little bit and say, is this the beginning of his Cy Young run? Obviously, he was horrible early last year, and then Mitch cashed a big ticket on him a little bit facetiously. But obviously, you know, if he can do anything like he finished down the stretch last year, maybe San Francisco now sticks their nose into this wild race for National League wild card right now. I mean, like, there's, what, three teams out of it? I mean, it is so intriguing, and that you can keep fan bases involved till late September with the way they structured the baseball playoffs. I think it's terrific.
Especially in the NL this year, where this was probably what the perfect elixir for what Rob Manfred and the powers that be in Major League Baseball wanted to see, where there's really not been a single team. Really, it seems like every week, right? Like, Arizona has been the hot team most recently. They've surged to take the second wild card spot. You've had stretches where the Cardinals have looked lights out. The Mets, for obviously an entire month, they had the best record in baseball from, you know, May through the majority of July. Pittsburgh has had good stretches. And the Giants, to your point, I mean, not out of it whatsoever. Four back of the Mets and Padres, who occupy the final wild card spots as it stands. It kind of, it feels like a situation, too, where anytime you have one of these teams that starts getting, you know, good minus money to make the playoffs, you sort of feel like you're paying into that tax so heavily because of the competition around them. All it takes is one bad series, and like in the case of the Padres, whose odds have shifted wildly here, Mike, over the last couple of weeks, one bad series and you're on the outside looking in again.
Well, bad loss last night against Gomber, right? Yeah. I mean, that, I know you're throwing Vasquez, so you're not, would they end up being a $1.65 favorite? But you get the lead in that game, and you bring up that reliever came in the sixth. I don't know, what did he get, one out of four batters, and the game blew up, and Colorado took care of business. The bullpen was good. They got to win the last two games of that series. If you're a Dodger fan, I think you have to be concerned about even winning the NL West. I watched that entire game last night, Ben, and I know you had the Dodgers.
I did.
Boy, it's hard to see this team being capable of winning multiple playoff series. I know Oakland's played better, but boy, you jump out to a 2-0 lead early there on Estes, and you beat 6-2, a late home run, three-run homer, very late, two outs in the ninth by Ohtani makes it look more respectable. But they were dominated in that game from the second to the ninth inning.
Yeah, you're sitting there early, you're like, nice little $3 in-game favorite. You're like, this will be a coast shop. So it's funny you bring that up, because the Dodgers, having lost three straight, D-backs on a heater. They've won four straight, wonders of 8-10. Dodgers updated the odds, still -650 to win the division. And as much as I have been in the camp of the 30-40 cent line moves have gone a little too far, fading LA, and I've looked to buy low in a couple spots for the Dodgers. Sometimes it works, sometimes, like last night, it hasn't. At the same time, you can't deny what in general is happening with LA, which is that there's no reliability for the most part outside of a couple pitchers on the rotation. And the lineup after about hitter number five does not inspire any sort of fear.
I mean, obviously they missed Betts. Betts was the co-favorite for MVP. He gets hurt. Now that moves everybody up one. And as you say, the depth gets cut by one full spot, and you're getting a top five player in the game of baseball. I think it's interesting to look at both the Diamondbacks and the Padres. I have a little more upside. Diamondbacks are playing very, very well right now. Remember, they weren't over 500 until two games before the All-Star break was the first time they were over 500 all year. They are your reigning National League champions.
They are.
By the way, people forget that. I think there's a little more upside to the Padres because of getting Musgrove and Darvish back. We keep saying that, but you know, you'll have them down the stretch, hopefully for the last 6 weeks of the year. I think it's interesting to take a shot at the Padres at 9-1 to win the division.
If you take out the AL East, AL West, where you have the two teams tied at the top of the division, no other division is tighter right now than the NL West from team 1-2. Most people, I mean, if you look at the odds, you would just assume, oh yeah, Dodgers 9-10 game lead. This is a coast job. And it was 9 or 10 games as recently as about a week ago, but that's the state of the Dodgers in the NL West right now.
Talk about a team leaking oil. How about the Phillies?
Oh yeah, Phillies down to, I mean, you know, the Braves have won won four straight. That's now a five game edge. Yeah. I mean,
and you're throwing Orion Kirkery. I mean, you're going to Seattle and throwing a bunch of relief guys as starting pitchers. Couldn't score last night till the ninth inning. They're. I keep waiting for them to wake up out of the funk. And meanwhile, the Braves, injury after injury after injury, only five
and
back.
They're just hanging in there. Plus 245 on Atlanta, who were the overwhelming preseason favorites. And there are a lot of people who said back in the preseason, if there's like a single best bet to make, it's okay, Atlanta's going to win the division. They're so stacked. But you think about, you know, all the injuries, pitching, hitting, and they've still, I was super impressed this week watching them take two or three in a series against Milwaukee, where the Braves just find ways to manufacture the runs when they have to. Pretty solid bullpen. They finally get they finally gotten some more consistency with some of their young arms. And it's just a matter of, okay, it's a war of attrition. I mean, that's why it's 162 games and why the betting markets, the fluctuation. I mean, you can, with timing, that's everything, Mike, as you always talk about. You can tackle this stuff really well.
Yeah. I know we ran out of time in this segment, but I'd love to talk about this NFL top 10 list.
We will. I think we will.
At some point later in the show.
I think we'll hit this on the other side because the top 100 players, NFL does this, NFL 100 has been revealed. We will discuss our thoughts, the top 10, and these are player-voted things. And
which players? The WNBA? This is an incredible list.
I don't know which player. You know, it cracks me up, the reveal, how they do that as well. Okay, so Olympic stuff we're following today. U.S. Women's National Team, they're just underway against Japan. Nil-nil there in the second half. You have under 2.5, correct? Feel pretty good there.
Yeah, I feel pretty good. Well, a little bit about what you said of the fear of Japan scoring. You know, I thought about U.S. to win to nil, but I just went under 2.5.
Yeah, I saw the Japanese women's team in person a few years ago, and really good defense, struggle in general, though, in the final third. U.S. and Japan, 0-0 as they start the second half. That's a quarterfinal there. We've also got a lot of other action. The third round of the golf is live right now, leaders on the back nine. And we have the gold medal match for the women's tennis about to get underway. Donna Vekic and Quinn Wenjian. Get some quick thoughts on that. Also talk USA Puerto Rico men's basketball. Tip off in about an hour and some thoughts on that top 10 list as voted on by the NFL players next. Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN Daily Newsletter. And our Michael Lombardi's featured in today's newsletter, Mike Baum, with burning questions for every single AFC team. That is a part of the newsletter. Get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe. Michael back tomorrow. Mike Baum, VP of Operations for Circa, the Golden Gate and the D with me here. I'm Ben in for Femi, who's out at Oxnard, California, staying cool. He's one of the few fans at Cowboy Camp. I don't know if you saw that picture the other day that was floating around.
I did not.
It was basically a shot. I think Mike Leslie, WFAA, covers the Cowboys. There was like 8 people in the stands.
Could you identify Femi? Did you see him?
Well, this was before Femi went out.
Oh, okay.
That's what precipitated this road trip for Femi. I checked in with him before he left. He's ready to go. Had the NFL scout sunglasses, the hat. The khaki shorts, which you're required to have.
That's good. I know he doesn't bet on Cowboys games, so I hope this gives him a lot of joy, whatever he can learn there.
100%. Okay. Our producer, Brian Ortega, is with us today as well. Does an outstanding job whenever we're with him. Is coming up with some top headlines here throughout the week. If anything you missed, and we're trying to decide, are these front page or back page headlines? Do they matter, or do we just kind of ignore them because it is training camp time? Let's start with Justin Herbert, which was really the news of the week here. Hurtin' Herbert. Also, Mike, you have the autonomy here to potentially change any of these headlines if you'd like a rewrite here. Hurtin' Herbert, after he was diagnosed with plantar fascia in his right foot, expected to miss the preseason, but the reports, at least early, is that Herbert will not miss any time in the regular season. Mm-hmm. That, to me, has to be front-page news when you think about how hyped the Chargers are with the expectations that Jim Harbaugh will come in and immediately reverse the fortunes this year.
No, I say it's back-page news, Ben. He wasn't going to play anyhow. Nobody plays in the preseason. It's a complete joke. If he's ready for week one, what did he miss? Some time in practice? He got to learn Harbaugh's new offense? He's still there. It's not as if his mind is hurt and he can't digest what's going on. I say this is a non-issue, Ben Wilson.
Non-issue for Mike Pump.
Non-issue.
And I respect if you're, like, if it's preseason.
Moved their week one line a half point.
Half point
off this news because there is some possibility, right? Obviously, what was the chance he wasn't going to start week one? Less than 1%. And now what is it? Maybe 15-20%?
Yeah, sure.
So I there was a half point move.
To me, simply because it is year one. If Harbaugh had already been there, but there's so much newness. And it's more to me that the roster is still a ways away from competing for a playoff berth. Set aside Herbert here, who is the obvious strength of the Chargers roster. A lot of work now for Jim Harbaugh to do, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Now you're adding in your quarterback out all preseason. The other big NFL piece that we saw over the week, it was the Hall of Fame game on Thursday, the new kickoff rules. Can I kick it? Is this front page or back page news after we saw the first glimpse of the new kickoff rule? Brian said it in, you know, the little sub quote here that was met with mostly negative reactions. I don't know. I don't know about negative, but it was probably interesting more than anything else. People were like, what am I watching? This is weird.
Well, were there great positive reactions?
No.
So,
but
I mean, I'm just defending how he wrote it. How he wrote it, I think, is accurate. It was met with blah, kind of a, it looks ugly and it didn't produce anything. More results oriented, right?
The longest return went out to like 31. Yeah.
I think it's silly.
I think we'll realize this will be an irrelevant rule change.
I think they should just get the ball on the 25 once you score. They want to take these high speed contacts out of the game. Just take it out. Okay? Just take it out. You still have some of it in the punt return game where you're going to get some entertainment out of it. Just the team starts at the 25 after the other team, unless they're going to, and then they have to declare an onside and all that. I do like the change that you can challenge the play clock, though. I think that's absolutely a good rule and should lead to totals in general being lower because the defense has the option to always, they're not going to challenge a bad offensive play. But if the clock's down and there was a big offensive play, you get a 5-yard penalty
instead
of.
That's such a good point. To me, the front page
and the extra challenge.
Yes, to me, the front page news is the fact that the NFL finally, in a league like this that has so much money and theoretically should have a lot of extremely intelligent people running the rules, yet it doesn't normally happen that way. How were they not allowing, how were they penalizing teams? Let's say you lose a challenge in the past. Well, now if a ref makes a massive mistake, say there's a ball that clearly short hops on the field and you're forced to burn a challenge. Well, now you don't get an extra challenge because of that. Now that rule has been changed where you do get a third challenge even if you were to lose the first
two. I think you should have as many challenges until you make a mistake,
yes.
Ben.
Yes, I agree.
Until you challenge one that you're wrong on.
Why penalize the coaches
for referee
incompetence?
The ref makes six mistakes. Should be able to correct them all?
I agree.
That'd be like saying there's a maximum of 3 VARs in a game.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. I don't know.
Although there's a big push to eliminate VAR.
Yeah, VAR. That's quite the polarizing concept right now. Still 0-0 between the U.S. women's national team and Japan, by the way. 63rd minute there in the Olympic women's quarterfinal. Yes, we are in agreement that the front page news different than the actual kickoffs going on. Let's go to some baseball here. The news of the week from an injury perspective. Mike Trout was going through rehab. His rehab shut down. Fishing season for the Trout. I like that headline, Brian. That's really good. Another setback from a meniscus tear for Mike Trout, was scratched late from the AAA Salt Lake Bees lineup earlier in the week. Then they announced he is done. Front page news or back page news? I have this on the back page because Trout and the Angels are already irrelevant, unfortunately, and this does not do much to change that.
It is back page news, but it's significant in really a encapsulation of a career wasted, right? One of the
such a shame,
most talented players, and Angels were never able to put together a competitive team, injury after injury after injury. By the way, we did the math on this. He made $344,000 per plate appearance this year.
Oh,
that's all.
That is all. That would be the front page headline if we were doing it that way. Feel bad for Trout. Yes, the situation he has been in. Certainly making quite a few bucks to compensate for that. Our last one, front page or back page news here as we get things started on the Saturday morning edition of the Lombardi Line. Venue Sports, a streaming service geared toward sports fans, will debut this fall for $42.99. Hot new venue is the headline. Last time I checked, Mike, with cable, which is maybe like, twice the cost of this, you get like a kajillion channels. But with this, you get ESPN, Warner Brothers, Discovery, and Fox content for $42.99 a month.
Cable is ridiculous. I would say it's not double that cost. I mean, and I get internet with it as well. I get it.
Yeah,
but it's outrageous.
I'm not a cable guy either. I'm just saying.
There's people that go back and forth every 2 years with DirecTV and Cox here because just to try to get a deal because it's such a runaway, a runaway price. I mean, $42.99 seems a bit exorbitant. Because I know you piecemeal together different things, but I mean, ESPN Plus, I couldn't do without.
Same.
I love Paramount, and those are the two that I really rely on. I don't know for an additional $20-something a month what else I'm going to get here.
Yeah,
I need
Peacock for me for the Premier League.
I protest Peacock.
But, I mean, look, I'm
I
not
protest
a fan
it.
Either.
I protest.
The point
it.
Is, you start adding this stuff up, and it's you know well over $100 a month. So.
Yeah.
That's well, the sad state of affairs. Like I'm a streaming guy too. I'm not a cable guy yet. I look at this and I'm like, this is just ridiculous. So, as a consumer, I don't know, just come to Circa every day. Just hang out here.
Well, we have access to everything. That's the good thing. Much more than I could get at home.
I know. We talk about that. We talk about that all the time. Yeah. I don't know. We'll have another Peacock. Multiple Peacock games in the NFL this year, starting week one. So get ready for your protest.
Put playoff games on there.
Some NFL, the top 100. We teased that here in our first segment. The top 100 revealed last night. Mike Palm has some pressing thoughts on this. Top 10. We've got the list here. Again, these are voted on by the NFL players. So just an interesting insight into who the players view are the top players. Tyreek Hill, best player in the NFL. Number one, Lamar Jackson, Christian McCaffrey, Patrick Mahomes, Myles Garrett round out the top five. And you get Chris Jones, Trent Williams. Will this voting impact Trent Williams' holdout and a potential contract? He gets TJ Watt, Travis Kelce, Max Crosby round out your list, Mike.
Patrick Mahomes is fourth? How is that possible?
I do not
know. I could buy the Tyreek Hill argument and with Mahomes second. I could actually buy that.
Because those guys they have an appreciation for the speed in person of Hill.
Remember, as he says, he's the only guy that you change here, as Michael says, you change your whole game plan in the NFL as an offensive player. But how do you put Lamar Jackson over Mahomes?
Yeah, and I'm as much of a Lamar, pounding the drum for
as anybody.
Say,
is it a popularity contest? Is he a more popular player than Patrick Mahomes? Maybe the brother weighs against Mahomes.
Maybe the brother.
Maybe they don't care for the brother, but I mean, Lamar Jackson is a real, you could teach classes at a university on this guy. I mean, and they still don't know what's wrong with him. They've got to be running every medical test in the world to figure out what is wrong with Lamar Jackson.
Could it just be like, what was that Miles Austin preseason when he's like, the hamstring just won't work. And then everybody was saying, well, he just didn't want to be in camp. But the thing with Lamar Jackson is, as much as you would be tempted to say that, he's had this pop up in the regular season time and again. This is these kind of mysterious illnesses where Jackson has missed now about a half dozen practices, or even, he's even missed a game with this if you go back to the COVID season as a result of illness.
Who's your biggest surprise that's in the top 10, that the person is in the top, not where they're ranked, but that they're in the top 10?
No doubt. Crosby's the easy one to say cracking the top 10. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand it, but I'm a little bit surprised on that.
I am too. I think he's borderline 20. Top 20.
Max Crosby. Rounds out your top 10. The NFL vote of the players. When we come back, Major League Baseball full card tonight. We'll also get some thoughts on the Olympic action that is about to get underway shortly here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on the Lombardi Line from downtown Las Vegas, where a bunch of Olympic action going on right now. USA women's soccer team trying to see out the final 5 minutes of extra time here, Mike, to punch a ticket to the semifinals after a goal from Trinity Robin, 107th minute against Japan, 1-0 there. And another slow start here for the U.S. men's basketball team, down 22-17 to Puerto Rico's 36-point favorites. You could have got Puerto Rico plus 10.5 first quarter. Almost 10-1 first quarter.
How much
quarter,
time left line. In the first quarter?
I believe 3 minutes right now.
It would
now.
Be looking good then, I would say.
You'd be looking good. 3:25 to go in the first there. Jose Alvarado leading the Puerto Ricans against the U.S. Actually, 2:17 to go in the first quarter. 22-15 Puerto Rico. 0-2 in the group stage so far. Looking to play spoiler there. We go out to our progressive guest line, though, right now. Talk a little more NFL. We teased it earlier. Frank Schwab has his power rankings out for his top 10. Always great to have Frank on from Yahoo Sports. And Frank, we'll first talk about the event that you have. You will be here. Mike Palm, I said headliner. I mean, they're all headliners, but you will be part of Mike Palm's football panel coming up at Circa. Really excited to have you out here.
It should be fun. I thought Mike blocked me, so I was surprised to get a text from him. So it was very nice. But I mean, once we start hitting, once the Hall of Fame game, which is obviously the worst game of the season, once that hits, it is football season, and I'm excited for it. This is going to be a fun season. Going to be fun to be out there talking some NFL football.
Frank, first of all, congratulations on the 2021 Milwaukee Bucks and their NBA championship. We've got your top 10 power rankings here. They're pulling them up on the screen. You've got the Ravens fourth, the Browns seventh, and the Bengals not in the top 10. How can anyone take this list seriously, Frank?
The one thing about the Bengals, Mike, that I'll say is I think everybody, and I wrote about this in my preview, that everybody just thinks about, oh, Joe Burrow got hurt, and that's why their season sucked. Like that's why they didn't make the playoffs. Jake Browning had a better passer rating than Joe Burrow last year. He had a better Pro Football Focus grade than Joe Burrow last year. I'm not saying Jake Browning is better than Joe Burrow. I'm just trying to point out that there were a lot of things wrong with the Bengals last year. Their defense was not good at all. Their offensive line was not good at all. They got it cooking a little bit when Burrow got healthy in the middle of the season. But part of my issue with the Bengals is I don't know if T. Higgins is happy being on that franchise deal. I don't know if Joe Burrow is healthy. We don't know. He even said, I researched this, and I couldn't find a quarterback that has ever had this injury. That worries me a little bit. He'll be out there. Everybody says he looks good. What if he's lost a little something? We just don't know yet. So I'm a little wary on the Bengals. I don't know if they fix their defensive issues, especially in the secondary. Meanwhile, I'm really high on the Browns. I just wonder if the Browns are undervalued in the betting market, and this really, really rarely happens when feelings get involved, but are they undervalued in the betting market because everybody hates Deshaun Watson? Because this team won 11 games last year with corpses at quarterback, right? Like, you can't tell me Joe Flacco just found a fountain of youth. I just think that team was really good. You're telling me that Deshaun Watson, presumably for a full season, we'll see. You're telling me Deshaun Watson's 3 games worse than Joe Flacco? Like, that team won 11 games last year, and now they're 8.5? Like, I don't get it. I think the Browns, if they get above-average quarterback play from Deshaun Watson, I think that that could be maybe the best team in the NFL. They are set up that way. They are really, really good. They just need Deshaun Watson to be above average. And nobody wants Deshaun Watson to be above average because we all know he's kind of a slimy guy, and nobody likes rooting for him. But that Browns team's really, really good.
Frank, I want to counterpoint this because I cannot back the Browns until somebody can adequately explain to me their defensive splits home road, how they were so polar opposite, how poorly they played defensively on the road. Can you explain it?
I can't. It is weird. I think it's a small sample fluke. I'm just buying into Jim Schwartz being really good. And the away, look, yes, I look at glass half full, right? I'm saying, look at that team. Look at the splits at home. They're a good defense. I just think that, yes, it was weird. There's no doubt about that. And it's kind of unexplainable. But I just think there's a good defense. Like, look at the talent they've been building for a while. I think the defense is going to be what we saw from the home splits and not the road splits. Look, I'll tell you this, though, on the Browns. I'm taking a stand on them. I have a few futures. But I'm willing to bail on them after a couple of weeks because if Deshaun Watson looks like he has the past couple of years and just looks bad, like he has, like I'm not trying to revise history here. If he looks bad, I'm willing to bail on them because that's the one variable for them. I think the defense is fine. I think skill positions are fine. They have a 2-time coach of the year. It's just what they get out of the defense or out of Deshaun Watson.
Probably smart too. You look at the variance for Cleveland. You look at say an AFC odds at 22-1. Really, really palatable too. If you're looking at what's the ceiling of that variance? I'm with you completely, Frank. Sort of felt like in the AFC, Cleveland was the one team getting undervalued. I kind of feel like in the NFC, it's Minnesota getting undervalued. Where do you stand on a Viking team? I realize it's kind of the same thing we're talking about here. You know, solid roster, but question marks at quarterback there. How good can Minnesota be as a team that's just being penciled in right now as number 4 in the NFC North?
Yeah, and the only problem I have with the Vikings, or a couple problems I have with the Vikings, is they play in maybe the toughest division in football. I think all 3 teams ahead of them are legit. And this whole, like, we're going to start Sam Darnold all year, they're really dug in on this. It's not going to happen, but I just don't think Sam Darnold's a viable NFL quarterback. He's just never shown it. I really like their coach. And their setup is pretty good. Like, we all talk about how great Caleb Williams is set up, and he is. But you look at the Vikings, and you're like, well, have the best receiver in the NFL. Jordan Addison had a great rookie season. TJ Hawkinson, when he's healthy, is a top 5 tight end. Offensive line's not bad. They upgraded at running back with Aaron Jones. Like JJ McCarthy would be set up really well. It's just, when is he going to start? I assume it's going to be earlier rather than later, because they're going to look at Sam Darnold and say, we're just losing games with this guy. What are we doing? We traded up to number 10 for McCarthy for a reason. But I do think the Addison, I think he's going to be suspended. I don't see any way around that. It's just, when does that happen? Obviously, Hawkinson's probably missing the first 6 games on the PUP as he comes back from the ACL. So I just wonder if they get off to a slow start in a really, really tough division. But I do think that team is good. I think week to week, they're going to be a really, really tough out. Everybody kind of gave up on them when Kirk Cousins left. And that was just the narrative. The Vikings are going to stink when, you know, they've kind of fixed their quarterback situation. I like McCarthy well enough, especially with that coach. I think the Vikings week to week are going to be really, really tough out. And they're going to have a lot of value just betting them on the line week to week. I don't know that that's a playoff team, but I think that they're going to be a lot better than people anticipate. I agree there.
Frank, two summers ago, during the halcyon days of the nuts slash odds on, you identified the Eagles as a team you were very high on and had bet to win the Super Bowl. They win the NFC, they lose to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. I wanted to ask you, is there a team like that this year? Now, you said you were willing to bail on the Browns, so that tells me that's not the same level of confidence as you had in the Eagles 2 years ago. But is there a team this year that you have that kind of confidence in?
I will say this, that, yeah, and thanks for reminding me that that Eagles ticket didn't cash. Like, that was fun. That was great to have that one all season in my pocket and then watch them blow a second-half lead. So I appreciate going down memory lane with you there, Mike. But, yes, I think the one team that stood out to me that I had the vibes with was the Jets. And not that it's some big secret that the Jets are good, but just in I had the same vibes of, oh, my God, this roster is absolutely loaded. And I've talked about this a lot. I don't agree necessarily with the rankings, but Pro Football Focus put out the rankings of every unit, you know, tight ends, who's the best tight ends, who's the best quarterbacks, whatever. And the number one defensive line for Pro Football Focus this year, the New York Jets. The number one linebacking core for Pro Football Focus this year, the Jets. The best secondary for Pro Football Focus was the Jets. I don't agree with that they're the best at every single level of defense, but they're top five at every level. And that defense is just going to be absolutely positively nasty. The offense is fine. The offensive line has been fixed. Like the Browns, there's just one variable to me, and that's the quarterback. And we're talking about a four-time MVP. I get he's 40. I get he's coming off the Achilles. I get he didn't look great his last Green Bay season, so maybe he's just washed. But if Aaron Rodgers is above average, this team was competitive with an absolute zero at quarterback the last 2 years. What do they look like with a good quarterback? What if Aaron Rodgers is a top-five quarterback still? I don't think so, but I think that's within the range of outcomes. So I think the Jets are the team that kind of gave me that vibes. I've made three Super Bowl wagers, the Jets, the Browns, and the Lions. Those are my three. And I think I'm going to stick with that because I think that those three teams to me provide value and have the roster to win the Super Bowl.
He is Frank Schwab at Yahoo Schwab, where you follow him. Last thing for you, Frank, Mike and I had some disagreement. We had our front page or back page news segment. Mike says, Justin Herbert, the injury is back page news because it's the preseason. I do say it's a legit thing here for a Charger team with a lot of expectations. Where do you stand on the injury that we'll see Herbert miss the whole preseason?
Yeah, I think it's, I'm on your side. I think this is a serious thing because he'll be back by opening day. I think that'll be, you know, he's a tough dude. He's going to be there week one. But I think it's just like Joe Burrow last year, where everybody's like, oh, Joe's back in the lineup week one. Everything's fine. And Joe Burrow was not right for 6 weeks, and they started 1-3. I can see something similar happening. I was down on the Chargers anyway. I don't think Jim Harbaugh's got his guy there yet. I think this roster is pretty bad. No receivers, no running backs. I think they need some time to get that thing going for Harbaugh. He'll win eventually. I was already down on him this year, though. And then the Herbert injury just adds to that. I just don't know that Justin Herbert is going to be right for a month or so, end of the season, and get off to a slow start. And, you know, all of a sudden those under tickets look a lot better. That's a team I just think was way, way, way overvalued. Did not like the Chargers.
Frank Schwab, outstanding sports betting analyst for Yahoo, and he'll be out here in Vegas in just a few weeks' time. Also a great segment, Mike, because we got to use the word halcyon.
He's the best.
Way to go, Frank. Thanks as always, for joining
us.
Thank you.
Every Wednesday. He was every Wednesday guest.
Every Wednesday. On Odds
the
On.
On Nuts.
The Nuts. Mm-hmm. We have our final segment coming up. We're not the Odds On. We're not the Nuts. We do our best here on the Lombardi Line. Final segment after this. Right now at our new look, VSiN.com, we have all sorts of best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides. Adam Burke, full Major League Baseball breakdown for the Saturday card. We also have Zach Cohen on the Olympic basketball and Olympic tennis, and full NFL coverage as well. Matt Eumann's a great write-up on the preseason quarterback depth charts around the NFL, which is well worth checking out there. As we welcome you back for the final time here on the Saturday edition of the Lombardi Line, it's final from France, USA 1, Japan 0. That is in the women's soccer quarterfinals. After extra time, Trinity robbing the winning goal there, Mike, in the 107th minute. And most notably, too, not only did the USA advance, where they were second favorites futures-wise behind Spain, Spain are down right now. Spain down 1-0 to Colombia. Ooh. Spain, the tournament favorites, huge favorites there. You could get, even in-game right now, Mike, plus 225 on the draw as they're about to go to halftime.
That's
like Spain eking this out here in extra time would not surprise me.
Can you get Colombia plus a half goal? What's that price?
Let's see.
It's got to be an
regular
alternate
time.
Market.
Columbia, yeah. Even money, plus a half goal.
I might delve into that.
Yeah. I don't mind that whatsoever. That's not a bad play. And the total right now, sitting 3.5 heavy juice to the under at -165. I also wouldn't mind, say, like an under 2.5, +190. You get the one.
Well, we got
Spain
several ways to attack this game as we get off the air.
Okay.
The second half.
I think I'd rather bet the draw, though, but at +250. Than the +190 on the under 2.5. I mean, the difference with the under 2.5, you're getting the potential Spain going all out. Colombia gets the counter 2-0 goal late, but to me, that's unlikely to happen.
I had a viewer write to me, a VSIN Pro subscriber, that wanted me to pose a question to you before we got off the air.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on South Sudan catching 13 against Serbia?
I'm a little surprised the line is that high, to be completely honest. South Sudan has proven, so this is not just one exhibition game the U.S. could care less about, where South Sudan lost by one as a 43.5-point dog, but we're never in danger of not covering as a 29-point dog in the previous game. Handled Puerto Rico, who, by the way, Puerto Rico's tied with the U.S. 6 minutes to go in the first half in a game the U.S. have clearly been sleepwalking. And, yeah, South Sudan, this is something that it's been apparent to me from talking with you, Mike, the last couple of days, trying to set odds on these basketball teams has been next to impossible. And what you've seen from Serbia is that outside of Nikola Jokic, there's the Nikola Jovic, who's a G League guy for Miami, there's just not much talent on the Serbia roster. South Sudan plays really, really hard, and they're physical. They're not afraid to clench down in the paint and make life really difficult on opposing interior scorers. It wasn't like the USA were just getting easy drives to the basket. Even LeBron James' winner, if you go back to the exhibition game, it was like a hard drive at the rim that one of about one or two people in the world are able to make happen. So I am in complete agreement with that thought that South Sudan, that line is a little bit expensive. I was surprised that wasn't more like in the 10 range for the game today. And that's coming up later. Final group stage match after South Sudan got their first ever win in the Olympics over Puerto Rico. But good question.
By the way, U.S. still a 28.5-point in-game favorite here.
Still.
Up one now.
Up one now. The first half on the U.S. was just pulling this up. The U.S. were 10.5-point first quarter favorites down at the end of the first quarter. U.S. in the first half, just updating my odds screen here, were 21-point favorites. First half money line, you could have got 15-1 on Puerto Rico. And it's a one-point game, 38-37. I wonder if anybody bet the double chance. Where if you go back to the South Sudan game, South Sudan to win the first half alone was 20-1. It's like South Sudan to win the first half, USA to win the game. You're getting a giant payout. I mean, not at all an unenticing bet. Say that on today for Puerto Rico.
I don't know that taking 28.5 is not interesting as well right now, but. Anyhow, we will finish off with some more Major League Baseball thoughts.
Yes,
on today's
card.
We will.
The one I like today and on the Garrett Crochet Bailey Oberfront, White Sox and Twins. I guess the one question you'd have on Crochet, what is his motivation? How does he look like? I would say, if anything, guy's going to come out pitching angry that he's still stuck on this mired White Sox team. It's not like you're going to see the guy just go in the tank simply because he wasn't dealt. That's not really how the mentality of Major League Baseball players, especially top-end ace starting pitchers, works. Minnesota has been very hit or miss, up and down with the bats, especially since the All-Star break. I do like Bailey Ober with the command, especially against a White Sox team that has been so undisciplined at the plate. I refuse to bet full game totals involving the White Sox because of the bullpen.
Oh, what, they give up eight in the eighth last night, or six in the eighth?
So I'll go first. As much as I usually do not play many first fives under that are below four, in this case, you are getting a plus price. It's heavily juiced to the over. You can get even money or +105 on an under first five, 3.5. That is how I'll approach it. I have no hesitation in backing Garrett Crochet despite him not getting traded at the deadline there for Chicago.
The White Sox have now lost 18 in a row.
Yeah.
The last time they won a game was against the Twins in the first game of a doubleheader on getaway day in Chicago. It's amazing. It's the eighth longest losing streak in the modern era. And they're only five games away from setting the longest losing streak of all time. Today, I guess you would say, is their best shot because it's Crochet. I looked at it, but 3.5 is too low for me. I also watched Skubal pitching last night. He loses to Kansas City. That was a good pitch at Reagan's. Yep. But it goes out. Well, he gave up a couple in the sixth before they pulled him. Five and a third. I think five earned on the. He looked like he was going through the motions to me. Now, I don't know if he was disappointed he didn't get traded. But there was very little time between pitches, and it looked like he was just going through the motions. Will there be some of that with Crochet? He didn't get moved. He didn't get dealt to a contender, and now he's stuck with this franchise for the next 6 years.
Look, it's a fair question.
I just came into my mind after watching Scooble start last night.
I see that manifesting more as we get into September, when the White Sox have already lost 100, and they're like 40-110, and it's
their
like
current pace is to lose 123, which would be the worst record of all time. Yeah.
So when they're inevitably at that 40-110 mark going into the final 2 weeks, and you're throwing like that's when to me that sort of thought takes over, because it's only natural in that sort of situation. Like, who would have thought that Moldova would have more medals during the Olympic stretch than the White Sox would have wins since the All-Star break? How about that?
That is wild.
How would you have handicapped the
That's wild, there? Wild Ben Wilson, wild. I have two plays. I'm going to go. I played the Jays. I think this is just too high of a price here with Berrios. The win last night, I mean, I don't care if the team is so disappointed in the season. You're still playing in New York in a sort of a standalone Saturday morning game. And how about this? There's only a couple 1 o'clock games. It's everything's at night tonight with crazy Rob Manfred in his schedule. They could put Stephanie Kamerschak in charge of this. We'd have a lot better viewing experience if she did the Major League Baseball schedule. Let's take the Jays plus 170. And then I'm going to come back with the Pirates and Mitch Keller today. I'm really down on Jordan Montgomery. I think he had a handful of decent starts. He's been absolutely god-awful for 2 months. Pirates rallied in vain last night to lose 9-8. I come back with the Pirates as a very short favorite at 115 here today.
There we go. Pittsburgh Pirates. Don't you also feel like, as much as Arizona, you can say, well, yes, they were the defending NL champs. They have been red hot as of late. All of these teams, even the Mets to a degree, it's been very much a what goes up must come down sort of season for those middling NL teams. Not to suggest that this is the day that it happens for Arizona after a crazy 9-8 game last night, but I'm not necessarily buying Arizona long term. This feels like the peak of their market value.
I don't know. Interesting that they rallied. They struggled for so long. They're missing pitching too, starting pitching. I think they're going to be a playoff team, but with this pitching matchup today, this number should be like 135 or 140 to me, with Keller against Montgomery. So that's why I think there's value in laying the short price with the Pirates.
Any interest in taking a short, cheap price with Hunter Green now for the Reds day after getting no hit?
He's been good, too. He's been really consistent. Yeah. They haven't scored a ton of runs for him. I looked at him. I didn't eventually play the game. Tigers hadn't named a starter. Rangers hadn't named a starter when we started the show this morning. I don't know if they had or not. First start for Martin Perez for the Padres tonight, looking to bounce back. That's a big price. But going against a reliever starting for the Rockies, maybe take a look at the run line on the Padres.
Yeah, it would be interesting, too, looking at the Michael Lorenzen angle for Kansas City, his first start for the Royals after being dealt from Texas. Remember, Lorenzen's the last start for Texas, and he's had a good year, was awful for the Rangers. Kind of surprised, like, how long will he even be in the rotation? I sort of assumed KC would pencil him in as a back end of the bullpen guy who has been a very effective closer if you go back to his time in Cincinnati. But no starter yet announced there for Detroit. Tanner Houck going for Boston, no starter announced there for the Texas Rangers. And we watch now the rest of the – I think that's why. Yeah, baseball, they're like, hey, they wanted to let us watch the Olympics in peace and not have anything counter-program.
On serve in the second, Betchett serving 2-3 in the second in the women's gold
uphill
medal
battle
match.
There. We look forward to the show tomorrow. We'll have a lot more live Olympic action as well as we continue on the Lombardi line this weekend. Up next, it's The Handle, Matt Brown, Mike Somich. When we come back right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.